Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Thomas Manton's A Treatise of Self-Denial. And again, he's using the verse Matthew 16:24, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, which is only part of the verse. But that's the text, the main text he's using. And last time, we continued on with the general section, how he's dealing with it generally. And so the third part of that was the notes and signs of self-denial. So he said there was exclusive and inclusive marks. Exclusive means if you're doing these things, you're not being self-denying. And then inclusive were signs that you or things that you do or not do that are self-denying. Point four was to give you some means of self-denial to hopefully help make the work more easy. And so then that brought us up to a final section before he starts getting into specific types of self-denial. And Lord willing, that's where we're going to continue on for this time. And I'll go ahead and begin. He says, before I come to the particular kinds of self-denial, take some observations concerning this duty. He says, if you would deny yourselves, number one, everyone must observe his temper and the particular constitution of his own soul. And temper is like temperament, like how your personality is what you're prone to. There are several ways of sinning. Let everyone look to his own way, Isaiah 53, verse 6. God knows we are all out of the way, but usually there is some particular way of sin into which our hearts do wander and digress. Now, when God tries any man, he tries him in his Isaac. Therefore, self-denial must be considered according to the kind of self-love. Which way does self-love most of all bend and incline your souls? The observation is necessary, because there may be some kind of shadow of self-denial in carnal men. Lusts are obstinate, and lusts more generally are any corrupt desire of the heart. So lusts are obstinate, and because their contrariety will not give way one to the other, therefore, for the convenience of the grand lust, or I believe our most favorite carnal or corrupt desire, a man may deny himself in something. A covetous man bereaves his soul of good and may be rigid and sullen to his nature, yet he may not deny himself. He may deny himself of pleasure, but not of worldly profit, P-R-O-F-I-T. Now others that are of a draggy and voluptuous constitution of spirit, they may be slight as to worldly profit when their hearts are caught up in another's snare. Psalm 18, verse 23, I kept myself from mine iniquity. Usually there is some special sin which, by the frequency of temptation that often occurs and our desires that way, or toward that sin, we may call our sin, or ones that we're prone to, or that are our favorite sins. Now herein is our uprightness tried when we can deny our sin, our favorite ones, or the ones we're prone to. Number two, many may deny themselves in purpose that yet fail when they come to act. Certainly in purpose we must deny ourselves. Whenever we come to Christ, we must bring our lives and our comforts in our hands. We must come with a resolution to part with all. Though every Christian be not a martyr in effect and act, yet he must be in vow and purpose and resolve to renounce all upon the just and convenient reasons of religion. Now the trial is when we are put upon these particular cases. We cannot so well judge of an affection by its single exercise as when it is brought to a direct conflict and trial. The things of religion, in the absence of temptation, may seem best to the soul, but the spirit is never discovered till we come to an actual choice and particulars are compared with particulars, then desires, which lay before, hid and dormant, rouse themselves and oppugn grace in the civil wars of the soul. When there is a conflict between conscience and interest, then we are tried. Now you need not wish for these cases, for before you go out of the world, you will find they will come fast enough. Many cases will happen when duty is without encouragement and all self-respects fail, nay, when for conscience's sake you are put upon visible disadvantage, Revelation 12, verse 11. It is said of the children of God that they loved not their lives to the death. When it came to this pinch, that either they must deny life or deny Christ, then they loved not their lives. They loved Christ more. Many may, in a prodigality of resolution, seem to lay all at Christ's feet, as Peter, in his confidence, talked high, I will not deny thee. But yet afterwards they may fail, when they come to resist unto blood, Hebrews 12, verse 4, ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. When you must make choice of the world or Christ, then are the best discoveries made. Number 3, they are nothing in religion that cannot deny pleasure and the delicacies of life. You have no real religion. For this is the constant and private self-denial of a Christian, which is always necessary. All sin is rooted in a love of pleasure more than of God. For therefore do we sin, because of the contentment we do imagine to be in sin that draws on the heart to the practice of it. Now he that cannot abjure his contentment is nothing. Proverbs 25, verse 28. He that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. The meaning is, he that cannot subdue his inclination to pleasure does lie open to every temptation. As an unwalled town in time of war receives every army that comes, so is his soul, it lies obvious to temptation. And besides, pleasures will necessarily bring a brawn upon the heart. They are so contrary to the severity of religion. Seneca said, and I believe he was a heathen philosopher, certainly it is necessary that he should have low thoughts of duty that has high thoughts of pleasure and to gratify his senses. If God had required nothing of us but the perfection of reason, if we were only to show ourselves men, there must be a bridle upon appetite and sensual desires. There is an old quarrel between appetite and reason. Nature itself would suggest such arguments to us as would put us upon the mortification of the senses. So he's saying that not only does God require it to run from sin, but that even just by reason, even heathen philosophers, and even by reason of nature, this should be evident to us. Number 4, we must deny ourselves in point of desire as well as in point of enjoyment. Titus 2 verse 12, denying ungodliness and worldly lusts. The great part of this duty consists in mortifying and subduing worldly lusts, again any corrupt desire, that we may be content with our portion, though but a little of the world, if God sees us fit for no more. We need to be content with the portion that God has given us in this world. It is a high point of self-denial, not only to part with what we have, but to be content with what we have. When the soul comes to this, to say, I have enough, because I have as much as God has allotted me, and because God sees it fit, I should have no more. To be content with a little of the world, and not to desire more, it is the poor man's duty as well as the rich. As a rich man is to quit his possessions or to leave them when God calls him, so a poor man is to quit, mortify, and subdue his desires. Covetousness, when once it prevails upon the heart, it desires, it grasps, It aims at the whole world. Therefore, Christ said in Matthew 16, verse 26, if a man should gain the whole world, implying that that is in the aims of men, to gain the whole world. When a man's corruptions break out that way, he will never be satisfied. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. The heart of man is largely drawn out so that, like the grave, we shall never be able to say it is enough. To enjoy complacency in our portion, it is a great part of self-denial. To desire more, it is but to desire more snares. If I had more, I should have more trouble, more snares, more duty. Greater gates do but open to more care. I should have more to account for, more time and more opportunity. And alas, I cannot answer for what I have already. If a plant be starved in the valleys, it will never thrive on the mountains. So if in a low condition we are not able to conquer the temptation of it, what shall we do if we had more, if we cannot be responsible to God for what we have? Number five, vainglory is as sordid a piece of self-denial, P-I-E-C-E, a piece of self-denial, as much to be denied as affectation of riches and worldly greatness. Covetousness that carries a man to another object, but vainglory to another end or purpose. The one makes us idolaters and the other hypocrites. An idolater sets up another god, and a hypocrite denies the true God. For Mark, God, by reason of the excellency of his being, is to be the highest object of our respect. And because he is the supreme cause, he is to be the ultimate end or purpose of all our actions. And when we set up another end or purpose, we deny God his prerogative. Number six, we are to deny ourselves not only in case of temptation to direct sin, when either we must thus deny ourselves or actually sin, but also for the general advantage of duty and obedience and the conveniency of a holy life. For instance, I am to deny my pleasure not only when reason may be grossly discomposed, not only by refusing such works of the flesh as stink in the nostrils of nature, or ones that are very horrendous or obviously really bad sins, but lest I be unfitted for duty, lest insensibly I contract a distemper and brawn upon my heart. And so I am to deny riches, not only not to seek them by unlawful means, which would be like a gross sin, and when I cannot keep them with a good conscience, but not to lay out the strength of my spirits in the pursuit of the world, that it may not intercept the vigor and strength of my soul, which should be reserved for communion with God. So if that interferes with communion with God, that's the same thing that needs to be denied. So I am to deny honors, that is, not only ambitious affectation of them, but when they will make me to lose the pleasant opportunity of devout retirement and a religious privacy with God. So not only to seek, we're not to seek the praise of men, but if something interferes with our time with God, we're not to seek that either. And riches are to be denied not only when they choke conscience, but when they choke the word. Number seven, in the work of self-denial, there must special regard be had to the seasons wherein we live in several cases. Number one, in doubtful times when God seems to threaten judgment, then our heart must be more loose from worldly comforts than at other times, and we must deny ourselves of those comforts which at other times a man may take. Our Savior reproaches the scribes and Pharisees for not discerning the seasons. It is a great fault of Christians when they do not regard the season and time of God's displeasure. For instance, Jeremiah 45, verses 4 and 5, that which I have built will I break down, and that which I have planted I will pluck up, even the whole land. And seekest thou great things for thyself? Seek them not. I am pulling down, said God, and plucking up, and for men to mind worldly greatness and honors and the conveniences of the outward life, when the face of the times looks toward a judgment from me, when we may see a storm in the black clouds, then to think of building and planting and advancing ourselves, when God is bringing judgment and things are going to be tried and difficult, it is a most unseasonable and horrid security to be thinking of the things of the world. This the Spirit of God takes notice of in the men that lived in the days of Noah. It is said, they ate and drank and married. All these things, you know, are necessary for the supportation of mankind. But when they minded these things and had no regard to the season where judgment was coming, and they did not see the storm in the clouds, at such a time when God seems to begin his controversy with a nation, whatever we do, we should do it with caution and fear. For the more we busy ourselves in the world, the more snares do we draw upon ourselves. God looks that we should be observant of the season and not seek after honors and ease and plenty. When judgments are coming, our hearts should be most weaned then from the world, when the face of the sky does begin to lower and thicken towards a storm. So that was number one, in times of threatening judgment from God. Number two, when we are like to put a stumbling block in the way of a new convert, 2 Kings 5, verse 26, the prophet, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, the prophet speaking to Gehazi, when he ran after Naaman for a gift, is this a time, said the prophet, to receive money and to think of vineyards and olive yards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? Simply to receive a gift had not been unlawful, but Elisha was resolved to take none to show he did not make a trade of miracles for private gain, but it was God's honor he aimed at. It was enough for him that the God of Israel was acknowledged by Naaman the Syrian to be the true God. He would allure him by the freeness of the gift. The prophet does not so much rebuke Gehazi for the lie as for the unseasonableness of the motion, that it might bring disgrace upon the honor and high calling of the prophet and dishonor the God of Israel. We must depart from our own conveniency in such cases. It is a great stumbling block to the world when they that pretend to reformation seek honors and profits, great, and that's P-R-O-F-I-T-S, they seek honors and profits and great places and preferments for themselves and their families. All pious designs must have a suitable carriage. So you need to behave properly as well. In Austin's time, or Augustine's time, it was a scandal against the Christians, and the heathens soon took up that reproach that they overturned the idols, not out of any piety or devotion, but covetousness, that they might have the gold. Reformers of all men should be content with the goodness of the action. And that's the main point there. Number three, in prosperous times of the church, there is much self-denial to be practiced. I confess, self-denial is chiefly for suffering times, for so it is in the text, let him deny himself and take up the cross. These two are coupled together, that when a cross meets us in our way, which we cannot avoid without some hazard of conscience, then we must deny ourselves. But, however, it is a duty that is always in season. I shall show you wherein this self-denial is to be practiced in prosperous times. First, we must deny ourselves in charity and in a constant improvement of our substance to God's glory. Charity, it is the constant vent of Christian affection, a holy, H-O-L-Y, emptying out of self in liberal and charitable distributions, and it is the only cure and preservative we can have against self-seeking if done out of sincere aims or purposes. Mark 10, verse 31, "Go sell all that thou hast," said Christ to the young man, "and give to the poor, and come and follow me, and take up thy cross." But he was sad at the saying, the young man was. There is somewhat extraordinary in that trial, "Go sell all that thou hast and give to the poor." This is the self-denial Christ called for. Can we trust him upon a bill of exchange to be paid in heaven? How much is to be given is hard to define. Somewhat must be done worthy of the gospel, and that you may have more comfort within yourselves. Otherwise, you may be as great a self-seeker as those that get goods by rapine when you possess them with avarice. He is not only a covetous self-seeker that takes away other men's goods, but he that penuriously keeps his own if he holds more than is meet or proper. We are to go back some degrees in pomp and pleasure. So it's just as bad as to be covetous and take other people's goods as it is to be somewhat stingy in holding on to our own. Take the example of Jesus Christ, how many degrees back he went. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 9, "When he was rich, he became poor that we might be rich." He left heaven to take on human flesh and dwell among men on the earth. The second, in obedience to the word in the strictest inward duties. Many duties go against the bent of a carnal heart, as inward mortification, meditation, self-examination. There is no outward glory in these things, and they are painful and distasteful to flesh and blood. Now, in this case, you must deny yourselves for the free practice of these holy duties, H-O-L-Y, duties. Cornelius, when he came to Peter, he and his family, they say in Acts 10, verse 33, "Here we are all before the Lord to hear all things that are commanded thee of God." He goes on, we are contented to hear whatever God will be pleased to teach. The ministers of the gospel are factors for heaven. They drive God's bargain and covenant with the world. Now, the Lord cannot endure any reservation and withdrawing the shoulder from any known duties, how contrary and distasteful soever they are to flesh and blood, you must practice them. We are all afraid of sins against conscience, and certainly they will be very clamorous in our consciences. But now the world is mistaken in sins against light and conscience. We think that sins of commission are only sins against conscience, as when a man commits adultery or tells a lie against a check of conscience. But oh, let me tell you, sins of omission may be sins against conscience too, or as well. James 4, verse 17, Mark the Apostle does not say, "To him that knows it is evil, it is sin," but "He that knoweth to do good and doth it not, to him it is sin." When you are convinced of any duty and do not practice it, you are not come up to Christ's rules when you don't do what you should. Sins of omission are sins against knowledge as well as sins of commission. Third, in the uprightness of our aims or purposes, to see that we be not guided by aims that flow from self-love. A man had more need to fear his heart in prosperous times than in times of persecution, that he be not led with perverse respects with the outward countenance of religion, with respects to his own interest, that you be not lovers of yourselves under a form of godliness, as the apostle speaks in 2 Timothy 3, verse 1. That you do not merely hold out a pretense of religion upon those undue motives. There is no greater enemies to Christ than those that profess Christ upon self-interest. Philippians 3, verses 18 and 19. The apostle speaks of some that preached Christ crucified, whose God is their belly, and who minded earthly things. All their aim was to flow in abundance of wealth and pleasure. They really oppose the virtue and power of his cross as much as those that openly do call him a seducer. Fourth, in prosperous times you are to deny yourselves in mortifying earthly pleasures and carnal desires, how dear soever they may be to the soul, though our lusts, again, or any corrupt desire of our heart, be as near and dear as the right hand and the right eye. No matter how dear these corrupt desires we have, we are to mortify ourselves in times of, especially, and even so in times of prosperity. In times of danger, God takes away the fuel of our lusts, but in times of peace, we are to take away the desires and lusts themselves, and indeed, that is the hardest. So we're to take away the desires, even. It is easier to quit life than one lust for Christ. Again, any corrupt desire. These being more rooted in our nature and more hardly overcome, or it's much more hard to overcome them, enduring of hardships is nothing to the overcoming of lusts or our corrupt desires in our hearts. We are to crucify and deaden these desires to the world, how sweet soever they be. Men think there can be no pleasure but in the accomplishment of their carnal desires. It is pleasant, no doubt, to a woman with child to have what she longs for, but yet it is more pleasant not to be troubled with those longings. So when these lusts are gone, these desires, it will be exceeding pleasant and comfortable to the soul, these corrupt desires. Your great work, then, is to take heed that you do not live as those that are debtors to the flesh. Romans 8, verse 12. You owe no suit and service to your carnal desires. We are bound to clothe and feed the body, that it may be an instrument to serve God, but no farther. You are not debtors to it. You owe it nothing, our carnal needs. And therefore, if those desires encroach upon you, you must renounce them. As they we can use them lawfully, but to go beyond that, and the lawfulness is in order to serve God, but we're not to go any farther. We owe those things nothing, and we must renounce them. The conveniences of the present life, these things serve only as ballast to a ship in the passage. We are bound for a city whose commodities cannot be purchased for gold or silver. You cannot buy repentance or faith or pardon or glory with gold or silver. And fifth, this public self-denial is required of you in seeking to promote the common salvation and public benefit of the saints without any partial respect to your own interest and opinion. Usually this is the fault of the children of God, said Nazianzen, when they begin to grow well, or probably comfortable or prosperous, then they are factious, like in factions, and divided, as green timber that lies in the sunshine is apt to warp. So when we enjoy the sunshine of prosperity, we are apt to divide and grow turbulent. Romans 15, verse 2, the apostle said, let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification. We are not to please ourselves, not to look to the gratification of our own opinions, not to be privately urging our own opinions to the tormenting of interests and the breach of Christian charity. It is a most spiritual kind of self-denial to be ever ruled by respects to the general interest of religion more than by private affection to our own party. Look, as the elements leave their proper motion, the water will ascend and the air descend to conserve the universe, and that there may be no vacuum and emptiness in the world. So it is good not to be partial to our own private interest, and at least to forbear censures and exasperations and drawing everything to the height. All right, now he continues to the overall main section number two. He says, secondly, having handled the doctrine of self-denial in general, I come to the kinds and subjective parts of it. Self must be denied so far as it is opposite to God or put in the place of God, and therefore we may judge the kinds of self-denial according to the distinct privileges of the Godhead. So he starts the overall next section with an introduction that leads into the various particular types of self-denial that he's going to discuss. But we're going to go ahead and stop there for this time, and then Lord willing, pick up right there the next time. But until then, go seeking for God to show you your favorite sins. We pray he grant us that and the hatred of them, and may he grant us that willingness to give them up and not hold on to them and not hold on to any things of the world, especially above him. May he be our aims and purposes above all things. And may we not only be willing to give up everything for him in word, but when the trial comes, may we seek him now even for help to go through the trial in the right way, and indeed, as necessary, giving up all of ourselves and all of our all to him completely and fully for his glory. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.